You're listening to The B-Side, a podcast of Blessed Hope Community Church. Hey, this is Malia, your host as usual, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Pastor David.
Hello.
And wow, like at the time of recording, November is kind of coming to a close this week. I actually was working on paying some bills and doing stuff like that for, obviously, for the church today. And I was like, had to look twice at the calendar. Like, are we really at the end of November? Like, that's crazy.
It's going very fast.
Yeah. So
very fast.
Yes.
Yeah. I wasn't thinking about that. I was actually thinking, as you were saying, my co-host as usual, I was thinking earlier today that come December 1st, I can start forcing Tyler to have to do these. And then, you know, he could be like the Tyler Malia show every once in a while. So,
I think we need you. Yeah, you're the answer giver. I'm the question asker and you're the answer giver.
Well, I think just for the fun of it, we should make Tyler just do one on his own to see... I'll just sit quietly over to the side.
It could be like a hazing sort of situation. Yeah, see how it goes.
Start throwing out some really big theological words.
Yeah, how do you feel about... That's too funny. No, we would never do that. We're super nice.
Yeah, we would never do that.
All right, so we are starting to like get to the end of our Revelation series.
We have a light at the end of the tunnel.
We are almost there, guys. It has been... When did we start? I was actually thinking about that.
A long time ago.
Was it in the summer?
Yes.
Okay.
Part one had to have been
right.
Summertime.
I know it was earlier this year, but I couldn't remember when we actually started it. So I loved it. Like, I am here for the long series. It makes my job easier.
Yeah, no graphics.
And I know.
So when you have to wait for me.
So, I mean, I'm not complaining.
You have to wait for me for updates on sermons. And,
yeah.
Because it's all...
This makes my life easier, so I'm not going to... And plus, I just love doing books of the Bible.
I have loved it also. The problem that I've been having is... As we keep getting deeper and deeper into this, so everybody understands this. It's not like I spent months and months preparing a Revelation series and then we did it. Like, this is, I'm studying a few chapters ahead, you know, and then and reading and studying and putting notes together. So I've been like learning. I don't want to say learning it because I've studied it before, but this really deep dive, right? And there's been times as we've gone through this book, because there's a lot of times things are referenced back, I'll sit there and go, man, I wish I would have known that when I preached that like this week.
Sure.
And so there's just been so much. And it's also been awesome because there's just so much there.
Yeah.
That it's, we could preach it an entire year.
Oh, yeah.
And
still not touch everything.
Yeah, there's so much there.
Well, and I think really like every time you go through any text in the Bible, you're gonna discover new things.
Oh yeah.
Every time, like, and just never exhaust that well. Yeah. So
because we haven't even scratched the surface on stuff in Daniel,
right?
I know one life group right now is studying through Daniel, and
okay,
and so they'll make comments every once in a while where they're at and where we're at, and
and
it makes me go, well, yeah, man, if we really did this exhaustive study, there'd be times in the Revelation study we say, okay, pause, we're going to go into Daniel for a few weeks now, and we'd have to study all that, and then we'd come back, and then, so it's exciting. It's just so much.
Well, there's so many ties to the Old Testament.
Oh, yeah, not even, so Daniel's many. Just one, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, anyways, I've had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
It's been overwhelming, but in a good sense. It's just like, man, there's just so much, so.
Yep. So today we're actually, I know we've kind of been for the most part covering one chapter per episode, but today we're going to kind of stick to how you did it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
We took a break last week. I can't even remember why.
I was sick.
Oh, you were sick. Yeah. So we're going to cover chapter 17 and 18 today, and then our next episode will focus on chapter 19.
Yep.
So, and then we'll be caught up. Just to do it all over again just next week.
Come back after the break.
All right. So chapter 17 and 18. So one thing that I had read was that the, what is it? It's in verse 1, at the end of verse 1. It says, Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters. And that many waters was connected to, it's like their commerce back in those days.
Well, actually,
and that the modern equivalent for us would be like the internet.
Oh.
Well, I thought that was kind of an interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one of those.
It
has multiple
meanings. And it probably does have multiple meanings.
It does. Yeah. What I love about, and I've said it before, and I think I said it on the Sunday I preached that, is it's great when the Bible interprets itself. Mm-hmm. And it actually interprets itself when it comes to what John is ultimately alluding to in that moment.
Sure.
In verse 15, where he says, that the many waters represents peoples, multitudes, nations, and
yep.
languages.
Yep.
So it's like the entirety of the world. Again, that's what's always interesting about, you know, the Bible, is there's different ways. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, you go back to what you just said about the internet, right? Well, mm-hmm. that's how's the way that we're connected with each other, multitudes,
yeah.
languages,
yeah.
nations. And, you know, so there's ways yeah. that it connect to many things depending on the culture or the time that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately it's everyone.
Yep.
Right? She's setting upon, yeah, this is universal. This isn't, mm-hmm. no one group of people here can say that's who that is.
Mm-hmm.
This is, it's mm-hmm. an entirety of the world image there. So, yeah. But it's a crazy image.
It really is.
I can't even imagine being John and seeing the, yeah.
Yeah. This whole section is wild.
I know. It just, and you think by this time in the visions, I'm guessing, because this is total speculation, but everything he's seen so far, I mean, this guy's got to be getting tired. I mean, he's just got to be like, really? More? Like, how am I going to describe this? You know, I mean,
right.
the task that he mm-hmm. had was so huge.
Yeah. Do you think God like gave him or other writers of the Bible like supernatural memory and supernatural, like, because I'm like, I can't remember what I did yesterday half the time.
I've thought that with like the teachings of Jesus,
uh-huh.
you know, like the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
Like, let's just put it out there. Let's do a poll to all the listeners out uh-huh. there. Who would be able to write down my sermon? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I ask my daughters every time after church, what'd you learn? You
cliff know, notes.
They're like, you know, so.
Yeah, definitely.
So he did something. To help,
right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking too. And so, okay, so in this section of text, we see that the Antichrist will imitate Christ's death and have this, like, fake resurrection in order to amaze the world. And so we see, like, the contrast between Christ, who mm-hmm. is, who was, and who is to come, that section there. I think it's in verse 8. And we also see that Babylon is always used to describe like the sinful world.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously we can take that and bring it to our time and compare. And so I'm curious, like, how does the description of Babylon here resemble kind of the American dream?
Oh, well, ultimately, Babylon here and throughout scripture, mm-hmm. Like you said, represents anything that sets itself up in opposition to God. And the number one thing that we can really think about that sets itself up is in the opposition of God is false teaching, false religion, false worship. And that all stems from Babylon. And I tried to allude to that in the sermon, that that's why Babylon got branded that, because when we look at the Bible, that's where all false religion was birthed from.
Did you talk about Babel?
Yes.
Tower of Babel, that's what
I thought. So Babel being the beginnings of Babylon. I talked about Nimrod
being
the founder of it.
Yeah.
And
good
Nimrod,
old Nimrod.
Nimrod being the first person in the Bible mentioned after the flood, that the language there used, he shook his fist in the face of God. He was a person that his entire life attitude was to be in opposition to God. So mm-hmm. that's where we see that. So now, how does that tie to the American dream? Well, ultimately, it comes Nimrod is the example of replacing God with something else of worship, and that's the danger of the American dream, right? The American dream is replacing God with something else.
Yeah.
It's what am I chasing after? What am I putting my time and resources towards? What am I basing my happiness on, or my joy, or my purpose? What am I ultimately, what is the number one priority to me? And so mm-hmm. the American dream could, you know, America itself can be Babylon
oh, yeah,
in the hearts of sure. people. We see that when you look at, you know, Christian nationalism. You know, this is the danger of it is the teaching that mixes what sounds Christian or sounds good and then mixes it with this American ideology that's everything. And mm-hmm. and losing sight to the gospel and the church and Christianity is not set in just one country. Like America doesn't own, you know, it's kind of foolish for us to think about that even. Like we're like the part, I don't even know what word to use, but almost like we're the caretakers or the ones that are responsible for Christianity when our mm-hmm. history is so small compared to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's so foolish of us to think that we're the ones that got it right, you know, right. or we're the ones that are doing it the best.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's, again, Babylon is that. It's mm-hmm. creating a false religion, a false belief system mm-hmm. that goes against God. And that even happens every day in our American culture. So.
One thing that I thought was interesting that I didn't notice, I haven't noticed in the past, but in verse 16... it says the beast will hate the prostitute. So you mm-hmm. see the beast like turning on the prostitute, which I never caught before. Yeah. And so what does that tell us about like Satan's character and maybe about his end goal?
Well, his end goal has always been, okay, so let's go back just for a moment to mm-hmm. the Old Testament. What does it tell us Satan's desire was? In rebelling against God. Mm-hmm. His desire was to take the place of God, which ultimately means his desire is to be worshiped. And so that's his end goal, is to be worshiped. Now, what we're seeing here is Satan will use whatever he can to get to his end goal. So for a period of time during the tribulation, he is going to allow this false religion. Mm-hmm. So let's just put it this way. Think of any false religion right now. That false religion does not put Satan as their focal point, right? But he's fine with it mm-hmm. because any worship that isn't towards God, he's fine with, right? But what we see here is there's going to come this moment at midpoint in the tribulation, right? When the Antichrist, and we looked at that before, when the Antichrist is attempted to be assassinated and he's resurrected, that's when we see, the Bible tells us, at that time, all worship will go towards the beast and ultimately to the dragon. And mm-hmm. so that's where this language of he hates the prostitute is, he hates it because, not because he had a problem with it, it's just he's finally reached that point where we're taking the mask off completely. We're not worshiping just a false religion. You're going to worship me now. So he's going to remove this mm-hmm. this false religion that has surrounded the globe and say, no more pretense here. Let's just mm-hmm. make it what it is. And so that's where, when we think about he hates it, he hates it because it's the, I don't want to just be the puppet master anymore. I want to be the focal point. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to remove it. So that's mm-hmm. his true intention, his true desire. And so as Christians, we need to really, I'm going to hate saying this because it's convicting to even me too, is we have to really pause and realize that when we fall into the temptation to worship something other than Jesus, it's not the thing that we're ultimately behind the scenes of that. We're ultimately worshiping Satan himself because he's mm-hmm. he's the puppet master of all of these things. Mm-hmm. I'm going to dangle this in front of you and you're going to worship it. But ultimately you're worshiping me. And I think most people would say, I would never Ouch. Worship Satan. Yeah. I would never do that. But he's the puppet master uh-huh. behind it because it's taking our focal point off God.
Right. And he wants it to not feel like it's us worshiping him to us. Because that'll keep us going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we'll defend it and we'll fight against it because mm-hmm. we'll say, I would never mm-hmm. do such a thing, you know?
Yeah, that's a hard truth.
It is, right? It is. Thanks because many of that. The things that we end up, many of the things that we end up worshiping without even realizing it, they're not bad things.
Correct. Yeah.
That's what's even scary about a lot of false religions. See, mm-hmm. we say false religions and sometimes we think
extreme.
Yeah, extreme.
Right.
But, you know, let's just put it this way. Islam, there's a lot of good people in Islam. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about Jehovah's Witnesses. There's a lot of good people and they do good things, right? So that's what's hard about it is mm-hmm. a lot of times the things we get sucked into worshiping and worshiping instead of Christ, they're not necessarily bad, but that's the trap. That's mm-hmm. the day. I mean, if you think about any trap or a snare, the Bible talks a lot about snares. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you don't bait a snare with something that isn't attractive and good because you want to draw the person into it. You know, an animal, I want what's in that snare. It's not until you get snared that you realize that wasn't good for me. Mm-hmm. So that's how Satan works is yeah. it's, you know, I think about it with some of the stuff that I, you know, can fall into worshiping, you know, my own comfort, my family, my mm-hmm. children, you know, even providing for my kids like this. I want to give them the best experiences and I can prioritize that over God.
Sure.
Go back to your question of the American dream, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to pursue that with everything I got and live these experiences and have as much money as I can and a nice house. And mm-hmm. again, they're not bad. But is that what God's will is for my life? That's the right. question, right? Have we asked him? Mm-hmm. Is that what he wants? You know, I think about that with even my girls when we think about asking, well, what do you want to do with your life? Mm-hmm. Right. And they already both say what they wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I say all the time when they make it, I was like, that's awesome if that's what you're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But have you spent time seeking God on that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so.
So how do we as Christians pursue faithfulness when so much of our society seems to be opposite culturally from what God wants us to pursue? And then how do we protect against the prostitutes, quote unquote, seduction, the world's seduction?
The world's seduction. Well, how do we remain faithful or how do we pursue that? I think... I love how many times the answers are the answers that you hear all the time, but sure. they're the answers that, you know, it's being faithful to the disciplines that are required, right? Mm-hmm. I know you love talking about disciplines.
Yay, disciplines!
but Paul talks about
they're
that.
They're so foundational, though.
They are. Paul talks about it in the New Testament. He says some, like, physical exercises of some value, mm-hmm. but he says what I really do is, like, I, you know, these disciplines of life and the Spirit and all that and walking in step with the Spirit. So mm-hmm. there's things like anybody that's listening, if you expect to be faithful in your walk with Christ, then you have to walk with Christ. That mm-hmm. means be in the Word, be studying the Word, be applying the Word, be mm-hmm. in prayer. These disciplines of meditation and, you know, there's so mm-hmm. many different disciplines.
Being
you know?
Involved with a local body.
Being involved with a local body. That would be one that
going
I would
to church,
say,
like, that's a discipline. It really is a spiritual discipline. Because it is. I mean... It's not easy.
Yeah. And I would challenge that it's not just a matter of going to church. But it's being involved in yes. the church and invested in the church. Yes. And, you know, some of my...
Going's the first step.
Yeah. Showing up is the first step. I laugh at sometimes you see some of these videos on social media that I've seen them where it's a... The last one I saw, I remember it very vividly. It was a woman sitting in a church chair, similar to ours, sitting in a church chair. And then the banner on the video said, "Why can't I make any Christian friends?" And then the next scene is me after every service. And it's her getting up and, like, weaving real fast through everybody yep. to get out the door.
Yeah.
Like, it. So it's like, you're the reason you're not mm-hmm. making connections. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that goes to, you know, one of the things, how do we stay faithful is accountability. And we all can relate to this. You take any habit of life or any foundational behavior of life, 99% of the time, I'm saying some people can have success without accountability, but majority of the time, you have to have other people that are pursuing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So if you want to... you know, get physically fit. You have other people around you that hold you accountable to mm-hmm. it. If you want to learn, you know, it's kind of like people that I know that learn instruments. Like, that's one thing. I love talking to people that have learned how to play guitar. And I love when I say, like, well, how did you learn? And they took lessons, but they said, oh, most of it was just sitting around with the other guys and just mm-hmm. playing guitar. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to have that mm-hmm. accountability of other people pursuing the same thing you are.
Yeah.
So that's why you need to be in the church, mm-hmm. right? Because some people will say things like this. Well, I don't need to be in the church because I have my Christian friends. Mm-hmm. The problem is your friends might call themselves Christians, and they probably are Christians. Mm-hmm. But if that relationship is not built upon a foundation of pursuing faithfulness to Jesus, mm-hmm. you're just hanging around with some Christian people.
Right.
You're just hanging out.
Yeah.
You know, that's not pursuing something.
Yeah.
That's just, you got good you got friends.
And usually they're going to agree with you.
Oh, yeah. Most times.
On the things that yeah. maybe you need to be challenged on yeah. sometimes.
They won't call you out. Yeah. They won't call you out. They won't. Yeah. You know, so I think that's the big part of faithfulness. I think your second question was, you know, how do you protect ourselves against what the process, you protect yourself against prostitutes. The
prostitutes seduction.
I think it's twofold.
Don't be a predator.
Well, don't be a predator.
Sorry.
That's an inside joke. anybody listening, there was no issue with anybody being a predator. It was just a joke said earlier. I actually laughed.
We may need to edit that out.
I laugh at the fact that we're using the word prostitute because think about it that way. Mm-hmm. One, acknowledge the fact that there's prostitutes. Like, right? Like, acknowledge it. Acknowledge that there's things in this world that are trying to pull us away. In fact, I didn't bring it up in the sermon, but I love Proverbs is a great book that you should, everybody, I'd encourage you, read a proverb a day. It's the book of wisdom, and just, it's good. But in the beginning of Proverbs, Solomon is actually, he writes a lot to his son. That's where he's like, listen, my son, you know, he's writing this. And there's like whole sections where he encourages him to stay away from the woman of adultery. Now, he's talking about adultery, but that has a bigger picture. He's talking about pay attention, keep your eyes open, realize that she's out there and that she wants to pull you away from the path of righteousness, right? And so that's the first thing is how do we protect ourselves? You have to acknowledge that it's always there all the time. Like there, so think about it from that prostitute standpoint. It's like, it's there. You can't just bury your head in the sand kind of thing. The other thing I was thinking about when we talk about, you know, these prostitutes that pull us away from God or this great prostitute is it's not only acknowledging that they're there, it's also being intentional not to go where the temptation will be. Right. So it's like, think about it from the prostitute standpoint again, right? If you're trying to avoid an actual prostitute, don't walk down the street where they're at.
Right.
It's like, oh, I acknowledge that they're real.
Folly.
But no, I'm going to walk right by them. Right. And then don't even go further when they say, hey, come into my house. Don't be like, okay, let's see what that's like.
You're just playing with sin.
You're playing with, and Proverbs actually says that at one point. I think Solomon makes this reference of, you know, you can't play with fire. Sooner or later, you're going to burn your lap. Like, you know, sooner or later, it's going to burn you. So I think those are two things is if anybody's listening and they're struggling with different things in their life, these sinful things, start with that, right? Acknowledge it for what it is. Call it out for what it is. Stop defending it. Stop, you know, either denying it or dismissing it. And second, start asking yourself, where am I putting myself to pursue it? If I'm struggling with lust, right? Get off the internet. If I'm struggling with anger or whatever it is, fill in the blank. What's the things that are, you know, it's the old adage, right? When we were doing Celebrate Recovery, if you're an alcoholic and you're trying to stop drinking, don't go to the bars. It's as simple as that.
Don't go buy beer.
Don't go down that aisle, right? Just don't do it. So I think those are just two very simple things. Simple in the sense they're simple, but doing them can be difficult in the moment, but they're not as hard as we think they are. So
I love Proverbs. I actually was thinking about doing a slow study through Proverbs next year. I'm finally going to, I'm hoping I can wrap up Ezekiel this year and then I can be done with the prophets for a while. I've like literally been doing like reading through the prophets and studying them for like 2 years and I am like, I'm ready to move on.
Oh man, that can get overwhelming and
it's
easy to get negative there.
It's like, well, I was telling you the other day, reading Ezekiel 23, because then you looked it up, remember? It's wild, man.
It is wild.
I'm ready for something different. I will say that. All right, cool. So chapter 18, could you want to give like a little brief synopsis of 18? Yeah, since it's been a while.
And again, I didn't preach a lot on it, hardly at all. The only thing I would really say with 18 is, again, 17 and 18 are John taking or God giving John a detailed look into the fall of Babylon from two different perspectives. 17 is the fall of the false religion. 18 is the fall of like the empire, the commercial, and all of that. And so, again, I didn't spend a lot of time there. in many ways it is, because it's a lament, because it's actually the actual people that are being affected by it are being represented. So when you read it, you hear, you know, like, excuse me, you hear the kings, you know, of the earth. So in 9, it says, when the kings of the earth who committed adultery with her, and it gives you their lament. And then it's like, these are the merchants of the earth. So the people that made money off of this, this empire, this is their lament. And then it talks about the sea captains, their lament. So that's why I didn't really preach a lot into it, because I feel like 18 is one that there's symbolism there, but you can read it and you can get the gist. It doesn't really take a lot of explanation. It's just basically, this is, the world has put their faith and trust in money and economics. They put their faith and trust in this world power, and it's all been stripped from them.
Yeah.
So in many ways, the lament of 18 would be, honestly, a lot of what we would probably hear in America if America fell apart. Like, because we're kind of the same way, right? We put all of our, like, my 401k and my investments and my paycheck and my, you know, and that's what's happening here, is all of that's been taken from them. It's all gone. And this is their reaction to it. So that's ultimately what 18 is their reaction to this kingdom that they put their trust in other than Jesus.
It's kind of, for me, it was kind of a welcome change up of the text, you know, to just, it's been so, I mean, not that it's not heavy, but it's been more this descriptive of like events taking place and stuff. And so, I don't know, like, I just really kind of like this section, because it's a little break from the norm of Revelation. But if we look at verse 4, then I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues. And one of my commentaries basically kind of compared it to a reference, Genesis 19. It's like a call out of a city, like a call for righteous people to leave a city about to be destroyed, like talking with like Sodom and Gomorrah. And so I'm wondering, like, how do we heed the warning of verse 4 here without like separating entirely from non-believers? Because we still have to live in this world with them. And you know, sometimes I think we want to just like flee to our little Christian bubble because it's easier. But how do we how do we do that?
Sorry, I keep
coughing. No, you're fine.
Keep coughing. well, some of the notes that I had when I was thinking about 18 is also going back to Jesus' teaching. So remember, some of the teachings that Jesus gave us was, one of them was like, don't store up treasures for yourself on earth, but store up treasure in heaven, right? So again, he's calling us to live with an eternal mindset and an eternal point of view, and where we're going for. You know, one of the most often misquoted scriptures is, you know, where the root of all evil comes from, right? Like, a lot of people, they say it's money, and that's why they look down on people with money, but it's the love of money, right? A lot of those tie into what's happening in 18. Jesus also said this. He says, what is it profit of man to gain the whole world, but yet forfeit his soul? That's what we're seeing in 18. We're seeing people that have profited from the world, but they are forfeiting their soul with it. So it all connects back to even Jesus's teaching with many things. So how do we look different? Well, or how do we separate ourselves? It's not about separating, like you said. It's not that we like, well, I don't have nothing to do with them. You know, unclean. Like, that's not our attitude.
Can you imagine if we ran around saying that?
Heathen.
I don't know. I like unclean.
I think we live in a world now that it's more the Christians that are called like unclean. But sadly enough, that's how a majority of Christian over centuries has happened, right? The pagan, and, you know, like, we're going to kill them instead of embracing them, sadly. But all it comes down to this is interact and have those relationships. But it comes down to this. Do you look any different than the rest of them? Is your priorities any different? I shared it some during our political series, you know, with whatever happens with the political system or whatever happens in America. Christian, how are we going to react? Are we going to look like everybody else? Are we going to be hateful? Are we going to be, you know, crying that the world is coming to an end? Are we going to be, you know, running around like the sky is falling? Or are we going to be people that stand upon the truth of Scripture and the truth of Christ and have confidence in that and speak that? you know what? So I love when I get examples that pop in my head, but I'll share it. I mean, if anybody, this honestly does, I wrestle with this. I'll give you one of the examples, a real life example is we talk about the importance of being in church and mm-hmm. being at worship and corporate worship and how there are times when there are people that don't like, so the holidays are coming, right? Chances are this Sunday being Thanksgiving weekend, mm-hmm. we will have a smaller congregation, sure. right? For a number of reasons. One is because people are traveling. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get that. But two, it's because people are going to have people, family traveling to them. Mm-hmm. And people are going to look at this Sunday and say, well, we're not going to go to church this Sunday because we have family here. Mm-hmm. I struggle with that because be different. Mm-hmm. Look at your family and say, we love you. Mm-hmm. We are so glad you were here. But hey, Sunday morning, we're going to go to church.
Yep.
And we would love for you to come with us. But if you don't, just mm-hmm. realize we'll be gone from this time to this time and then right. we will be back. Mm-hmm. I can't wrap my head around the, you know what? Because you're here, we're not going to go worship.
Yeah.
Instead of using that as an opportunity. So I'm not saying this as a, you should feel horrible. I want to encourage everybody that's hearing this to say, use these as the moments to show you're different.
Yep.
And show your family my devotion and love for Christ supersedes my love and devotion to you. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's an example of we should look different.
Yeah.
We should be different. So.
I love that. So how do we enjoy the good things of the world without worshiping them? Because, I mean, mm-hmm. God's grace, he's given us so many good things. And I think he wants us to enjoy
yes.
some of those things, right?
Yes.
Because they're not bad.
Yes.
But what happens is when they become too important in our lives, right?
Yeah.
And we worship them. So how do we not do that but still like get to enjoy?
It starts, I think, first with the mindset mm-hmm. that we are stewards of these things. They don't belong to us in the first place. So again, enjoy your family, enjoy your children, but they are a gift from God for you to steward. They are not yours, right? Family's one thing. Money. So go back to money and stuff like that. There's nothing wrong with being blessed. There's nothing wrong yeah. with having wealth. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's great.
It is great. But realize the reason God gave it to you mm-hmm. is for you to use it for his purposes and his glory. So a great example of this is I remember this was about 15 years ago, a Christian couple were thinking about building a new house. Mm-hmm. And God had got them to the place where they could do that. And that was, they were excited, but they were wrestling with it because it was like, is this the best thing right. that God wants us to do with this ability? They ended up building the house, mm-hmm. but they built it with this mindset. God, it's your house. Meaning we will use it for however you want us to use it. So that Christian couple for many times has opened their house to guests to mm-hmm. stay, small groups to mm-hmm. meet in their church, even a church plant that started in their living room,
cool.
right? Mm-hmm. Because the mindset was, God, you have blessed us with this, mm-hmm. and we will use it how you want us to use
yeah.
it, versus it's ours. We're going to use it how we mm-hmm. want to do it. So that's how yeah. we keep from worshiping these things is open hand, right?
Yep.
Like, God, thank you so much for putting it in my hand, but I'm going to leave my hand open for you to use it how you want to use it. And if you decide that I'm not supposed to have it anymore, mm-hmm. then I'm going to be okay with that because there's ooh. A reason
yeah, that's
that
good.
You don't want me to have this anymore.
That's good.
So it all goes really back to mindset. Mm-hmm. Is it yours or is it his? And how do you use it? So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think about our church right now. There's probably many people in our church right now. And again, I'm not pointing at anybody. So please don't say like, oh, he's talking about me. Cause I don't know, but take the house example. There's yeah. probably many people in our church right now that have the ability to say our house is perfect for a life group to meet at. Mm-hmm. We have the space, we have the ability to fit these people in here and we will do that. And that's just a prime example. I think about the early church. That's what I love about the early church was that's where they met, right? Mm-hmm. Was wealthy people would be like, man, we got a big house. Come over. And they have archaeology has found like houses where they knock down walls just to fit people in for the church. And so that's just that example of how do we keep from worshiping mm-hmm. these blessings that God gave to us is realize why he gave us the blessing. It's to use it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's good. So kind of as we wrap up here, we're to the end, right, of the of God's judgment.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, we are. Yes, we're very much there. When I say that we're not fully done yet is because you still have to go through Armageddon and we still have to go through the great white throne
Armageddon.
Judgment.
Armageddon. Oh.
So there's still more. Where we're at here is we're done with the series of judgments. So like the seal judgments are done, the trumpet judgments are done, the bowl judgments are done.
Okay.
Now it's the final last moments of man's foolish attempts to rebel against God and God just putting it into all of it. But the series of judgments are done.
Okay.
So
I feel like something that we've learned, especially through these last few weeks, I think you've done a good job of communicating, is like at the end of the day, like we don't get to pick and choose who is held accountable and who is not. Mm-hmm. Like that is on God, and we just have to trust the holiness and justice of God in that, and like that he is going to hold true to his promises and be faithful in that. And we just have to like give that to him, or not even give it to him, but just know that is not on us. Like that is... And to trust his character and who he says he is. Because I think that's something that's hard to that's been hard to grapple with, at least for me a little bit with some of it in this series.
Yeah. Well,
but.
And I think the entirety of Revelation is hard because we'll get here in a couple weeks. But right, one of the greatest promises of Revelation is found in Revelation 21, where it says this, that God will dwell with his people, they will be his people, and God himself will be with them, and he will be their God. And then this is the part that everybody just loves to hear. He will wipe every tear from their
that's
eyes.
That's my favorite.
There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.
Mm-hmm.
See, we can't look forward to that promise without realizing God has to do everything he's doing to get us there.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the wrestle, right? Is we want to hold on to, because the next thing Jesus says is, I am making everything new.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he can't make everything new until he destroys the old order. Right. So that's the wrestle for us, is like you're saying, is that's why a Christian, when they really trust the character of God and the purposes of God, that's why Revelation tells us at the end, our prayer should be, come Lord Jesus, come. Because we want to get to the fulfillment of these promises, because we understand this has to happen to get there. You know, it goes back to a quote that I shared at the end of the sermon this last Sunday. So that would be in the next podcast. But I love the quote that was said by A.W. Tozer. Tozer said,
I love Tozer.
He's great. And he said, I mean, paraphrasing, but he said, if it was up to man, the plan of redemption would be a bloody conflict.
Yeah.
Like we're always the one that's like, well, let's just wait a little longer. Let's try. God knows the heart of every man. So when we hear this judgment, God's judgment only falls on those that have made their decision.
Yeah.
Like there's no question. There's no, well, maybe if they were given another chance, they'd say yes. No, they've made their choice. God knows the heart. So we have to remember that. These are not, oh, if you just gave them one more try, God, if you just gave them one more chance. And when we read Revelation, we can't lose sight of what more chances do these people need? What do you expect God to do? He's already sent out his witnesses. He's already sent angels into the sky. He's already poured
out
judgment.
He's already been so patient. Is that in 1 Peter or 2 Peter where he says like
God is
being his patience so that not
none
one
will perish.
Perish.
I think it's 2 Peter.
Yeah. I think about that a lot.
So that's the thing when we study, this is what stinks also about studying Revelation chunk by chunk, is we could get so focused on the chunk we're in, especially when it's all judgment, that we lose sight of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And the bigger picture is like God has gone above and beyond just even in Revelation to show himself to the point that he says in Revelation, they will know that they will recognize this is the judgment of God and they will still reject him. So that's why we have to keep that in mind. God's not being unfair.
Right.
He knows their heart. And so.
Okay. So in one of my studies, I loved this quote. So I can't even pronounce this dude's name. He's a Croatian theologian.
Okay.
But I think it brings some clarity to like the judgment narratives and like the whole thinking, like, is this really fair? Like, how could God be loving and still judge people like this? Okay, so this is this theologian. I used to think that wrath was unworthy of God. Isn't God love? Shouldn't divine love be beyond wrath? God is love, and God loves every person and every creature. That's exactly why God is wrathful against some of them. My last resistance to the idea of God's wrath was a casualty of the war in the former Yugoslavia, the region from which I come. According to some estimates, 200,000 people were killed and over 3 million were displaced. My villages and cities were destroyed, my people shelled day in and day out, some of them brutalized beyond imagination, and I cannot imagine God not being angry. Or think of Rwanda in the last decade of the past century, where 800,000 people were hacked to death in 100 days. Mm. How did God react to the carnage? By doting on the perpetrators in a grandparently fashion? By refusing to condemn the bloodbath, but instead affirming the perpetrator's basic goodness? Wasn't God fiercely angry with them? Though I used to complain about the indecency of the idea of God's wrath, I came to think that I would have to rebel against a God who wasn't wrathful at the sight of the world's evil. God isn't wrathful in spite of being love. God is wrathful because God is love. Mm. I'm like, oh, that's so good. Because mm-hmm. it is hard to hold those two things, I think, and I think it's one of those things that we'll always be trying to like put together and understand, but oh, God loves us so much.
Yeah. Those examples come to mind of why I struggle with it is because I nod my head to all that, right? But then I also, there's that flesh part of me that says, well, that makes sense that God needs to have wrath on them because they were hacking up people with machetes. That's not me.
Yeah.
That's not my loved ones. That's not the people I know. So why?
Because the people I know are good people.
Good people.
Yeah.
So that's the other wrestle is seeing people through the lens of God's holiness as the standard.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you were reading that, the other thing that was going through my mind is you think about God's wrath and love. And I've tried to say this as much as I possibly can through this whole thing is God's wrath was poured out twice, first on Christ. And now it's being poured out on these people that rejected Christ. Mm-hmm. When you think about God's wrath and his love, these people are sinning in the face of God, which means Jesus, while he's still judging them, Jesus also died for those sins.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
It really is.
Like the people in Revelation that shake their fists and curse God, Christ died for that sin. So his wrath, that's why, again, we'll be talking about 19 in the next episode, but that's why heaven, part of their rejoicing in hallelujah is they say, your judgments are true and just because they can see the holy God. And they're seeing this through the lens of this is who God is. And so that's why they can say that. So anyways, that was a cool, that was a very powerful quote.
That's good. That's good. All right. Well, we'll be back with our next episode, chapter 19, and then we'll be all caught up. All right. Thanks for listening.